Let's talk to the Fine Gael Director of Elections, the Minister for Finance and candidate in Dublin Central, Pascal Donoghue. Minister, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
Good morning, Gavin.
Difficult not to talk too much about anything else without first addressing the opinion poll on the front page of the Sunday Business Post. I keep doing that. It's the Business Post. They will kill me for mislabeling them. But the Red Sea poll, which has Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin neck and neck at 24%, your constituency colleague, Mary Lou MacDonald, now proclaiming herself to be a potential Taoiseach. Your party 3 points behind. I know you're going to tell me that polls are only a snapshot in time and that the campaign is not finished, but the fact that your party is third in this opinion poll must be something that fills you with a little anxiety.
Well, actually, I'm going to take a different approach in answering your question, because I think this poll shows that there's a very, very credible prospect of a change happening for our country that I think could create really big risk. It shows there's the real prospect of having a government that is either led by Fianna Fáil or led by Sinn Féin. Yes, you're right, in the poll today, Gavin, we are up against us. But my far bigger concern is what this means for our country and what this means for the economy of our country. Because neither party are offering the kind of positive change that I believe there is an appetite out there amongst the electorate for.
Well, there's clearly an appetite for change, which suggests why those two parties are ahead of yours in the polls anyway. So then how do you plan to campaign in the final week to make sure that if people do want change, that the change they should look for is to elect the government that's already there?
By explaining that we have been part of the change that has happened in Ireland over the last number of years, by making the case that we have been part of the change that has seen nearly 500,000 jobs created in our country, by making the case that we have been part of the change that has been seen huge social change in some of the most difficult matters that we've had in our society, while also acknowledging that there are change that many want to still see happen, particularly when it comes to housing and health. I believe there is change happening. I acknowledge more needs to be done, but making the case respectfully to voters that in order to do that, we have to have an economy that's capable of paying for us.
Acknowledging that there's more that needs to be done is pretty obvious. But when people look for change and they look at what Fine Gael has presided over, particularly in housing and health, and we all know that the homelessness figures only this month have fallen under 10,000, but there's always a bit of a December wobble, so they could go back up again. We know that Fine Gael has presided over the health brief now for nearly 10 years unbroken, and we've had a situation where hospital waiting lists keep going up and up despite the spending, and we've seen trolley numbers that keep going up and up as well. It's very difficult for your party to stand over that and say that trust us, we are the change that you need, when it seems objectively that from when you took over and where things are now, things have only gotten worse.
Well, look at what things were like when we did take over and look where we are now. Let's look at that record.
There was no family homelessness when you took over.
Indeed, we had challenges in relation to homelessness then, but yes, of course, the challenges in relation to homelessness have grown. And as we are looking at what our track record is in broader housing, let's look at the fact now that last year we reached a 10-year high in relation to new homes being built, that between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 homes that have been delivered in our country are now being paid for by the government or being delivered directly built by the government. And looking at what things were like then versus where we are now, while saying, yes, we have made progress in housing, we're building more homes, the state is playing a larger role in those homes being built, we're seeing progress now in relation to the stabilising of the price of homes, which is a big part of how homes can be more affordable in the future. But in the balance sheet of acknowledging where we need to do better, I would still ask voters to consider, look at the degree of positive change that has happened in our country. Look at the fact that we have more jobs. Look at the fact that we have incomes that are higher. Look at the fact that we're able to invest in our public services again. And ask people to consider, do we want to run the risk of unravelling that kind of progress? Because if that progress begins to shift at all of the issues that you're raising with me about housing and health become even more challenging to address.
Well, let's just touch on one of the other ones there, just before we do move onwards. And we mentioned housing again, and you mentioned that incomes are up, and of course incomes are up. And in the course of the last 8 years, we've had unemployment falling from little over 15% to now somewhere in the 4% region, which is obviously very good news from the macro level. But I don't think a lot of people feel like they've got the benefit at a micro level. When they look at their own household expenses and they still look at the cost of childcare, which is the equivalent of another mortgage or rent in and of itself. And a lot of homes, as we know, are not owned by their occupiers anymore. And we've seen the way that rent has become consistently unaffordable for so many of them. And they don't feel like Fine Gael has done enough. So although, yes, the tide might be rising, an awful lot of people feel like their boats are being left behind.
And I absolutely understand how people feel about that. I represent those people in Dublin Central myself. I engage with them every week in my constituency office. I meet people when I'm out and about all over the country. But looking at each of those in turn, first of all, look at where we are with childcare. As somebody who, like many of your listeners, has children, use childcare providers, I know well the cost in relation to all of that. That is the reason why we have a national childcare plan. That's why we've made additional years available for preschool education to help with the cost and the support that young families can get. That is the reason why in our manifesto, we have a very, very clear commitment to make more subsidies available to help with both the cost and the availability of childcare. But of course, again, all of that has to be paid for by an economy that's stable and growing.
Sorry to interrupt you, but just on childcare subsidies, is it not the case that every time the state offers a blanket subsidy or a subsidy that is accepted or available to most people, that it only ends up pushing the cost up more? That we know the childcare sector is under an awful lot of pressures. We know that there's been industrial concerns in those areas as well. So if you propose to increase a subsidy that makes it more affordable for every child to get their childcare, ultimately the creche is going to just absorb that cost and it doesn't become any more affordable to the parent.
Well, I guess we're at the point, though, where we can't have our cake and eat as a government, because we can't on one hand be saying that the cost of childcare is a really big issue for families, and it is, and acknowledge that the availability of childcare is a really big issue for families because it is. And then on the other hand say then if we do intervene to try and deal with the issue of cost and do intervene to deal with the difficulty of the availability of childcare, that it mightn't have other consequences. And the truth of it is, if you look at where we are with issues in relation to the retention of childcare workers within the sector, in relation to what are the kind of costs now that childcare workers and companies and organisations have to bear due to the additional regulatory needs that we now have to look after the sector, and issues in relation to insurance. As subsidies do become available, I think it is possible that not all of the breadth of that subsidy will be felt by parents at the end of the day in lower childcare costs. I still believe most of it will be. And why is that? Because there will be a need for different providers of childcare to show that they are competitive as the national childcare programme is ramped up. But I think it will be the case that you will see some of the subsidies that are available go into wages for those who work in the sector and investment into the sector to ensure that the number of spaces that are there grow. And without getting really technical, there is a thing within the childcare sector called non-contact hours. And what that is where you make funding available for those who work in the sector, but it doesn't directly go into them looking after more children for longer. It goes into affecting their wages, their working standards and so on. And I accept that we need to make progress in areas like that if we're to have more spaces in more creches with more people available to run them.
It does bear some hallmarks, though, to the approach that you've taken for the last few years on housing, where, for example, when Fine Gael entered power in 2011, albeit under different financial circumstances, but there was no such thing as the housing assistance payment, or HAP as it's become known. And over time, that has become ramped up and ramped up, ostensibly so that it helped people who were most vulnerable meet the market cost of rent. But in effect, all it has done is become the government spending billions and billions of euro helping people enter into a bidding war with others so that the only people who benefit are the landlords. And it seems as if there is a consistent train across Fine Gael's approach in many different areas of society where it does result in spending more and trying to help people, but that all it does is add more fuel to the fire, and the only people that benefit are the people who have the service administered to begin with.
Well, I really welcome the fact that you acknowledge that the intent that is behind this is to help people, because it is. And the reason why there is a role for HAP, and that's the housing assistance payment, as your listeners will know, is because in the alternative of having a housing assistance payment means that those who are vulnerable mightn't be able to afford their rent at all. If they're not able to afford the rent, their living standards and where they're going to live could even become more precarious.
But it's the case that's still the case anyway. You're helping these people, and yet because of how it has risen the market and it's become a bidding war, those people are still only just about barely
and
able to.
And this is why I believe the solution to this, which we are currently implementing, is for the state to be playing a direct role in the building of homes. And that's what's happening. I believe in a mixed economy. I believe in an economy in which you have the private sector that does some things and the government does others right beside it. The only reason why we have to have a growing economy is so we can have a better society and look after people who are vulnerable. And that is why, as we're seeing the number of homes that are being built go up and up and up, and it will go up again this year, we will see the number of public and social houses that are being delivered go up as well. As we speak today, there's housing projects underway in 300 different plots of public land to deliver housing for those who need it. And we have to do it. It's our duty to do it. And as somebody who has experienced what all of this means in my own constituency, I'm clear that we have an active role to play in building homes, which is what we're doing. But again, we have to have an economy that can pay for us. Yeah.
All of the things that you want the state to do will obviously cost some money. And we know that your party, similar to Fianna Fáil, proposes to increase public spending by €4 for every euro of tax that you give back. All of that being said, how can you stand over the idea of increasing the income tax entry point for the higher rate to €50,000? Well, although, as you say, that is the average wage for the full-time worker is €47,000 or €48,000. There are a lot of people who are not full-time workers. And in fact, only the richest sixth of the workforce will get the full benefit of that tax change.
Well, actually, that's wrong, because somebody who's earning €160,000 will get the same cash benefit as somebody who's earning €60,000. And this is the reason why I don't propose to cut rates.
But those over €50,000 a year are already among the sixth richest cohort, the one-sixth who earn the most.
But I just want to challenge the point to say that people who are earning an awful lot will benefit from our change. Because the reason we're making a change in the threshold is all about ensuring that the benefit is capped, but the benefit is capped for people who are in the middle. But to deal with your point regarding why we're looking to make the change, it is because I believe that it is unfair that somebody who's on an average wage here in Ireland should be paying the higher rates of income tax. And what I believe is going to happen due to the income growth that is happening in our economy is more and more people who at the moment are earning 34, 35, 36,000 euro, as their incomes grow, they will get pulled into the higher rate of income tax. And I believe we should change that. I don't believe it's fair.
How would you propose to do it in the five instalments? Would you try to do it in equal tranches so that where the cutoff point is currently around 36,000, you want to raise it by 2,500 or 3,000 euro every year in equal instalments?
Very roughly. But as you go year by year, different things can happen in an economy. But my plan would be, if I had the privilege of being Minister for Finance, that I would do it in equal phases over 4 to 5 years.
The reason I ask that is because I know that it's on the very back page of your manifesto in the costing section, which is an area that has your own signature printed on it. So I'm sure that you've signed off on the figures. But I think the figure that comes to mind, I think, is 477 million each year to raise that cutoff point. And it's fine. It's a subjective thing that if your party wants to use the resources to do that as opposed to putting it in other areas, that's fine. That's your prerogative. That is why we have manifestos. That's why political parties run with their ideas. But you fix the same amount every year. It's 477 million euro for each year equally in 5 years. But is it not the case that as you go on, it could cost more or less to make those changes? Because if people's incomes are rising or the tax profile changes, that you can't specifically say you'll be able to do it with that money in the back. The point I'm trying to make is,
sure,
yes, you've given a costing at the back, but it's the year one costing repeated five times and you don't know what it's going to cost in each of the other 5 years.
And that's a very fair point. And the reason why it's so difficult to predict what happens with income changes year by year by year. And the way all proposals are costed from a tax point of view is the Department of Finance will look at us and say, well, if we used to do all of that in a single year, this is what the cost would be. And a degree of judgment is then needed to phase it out over time. In relation to your point regarding costing, what would happen is that if incomes grew even quicker across that period, our tax net would actually generate even more tax revenue.
Which means it costs you even more than to pursue this policy.
And however, that is why in the table that we've laid out there, we have said that I think it makes sense to do it year by year by year. Because if you look to do it in a single year, I believe it would be unaffordable.
But does it not mean then that when you acknowledge that the figures for years 2 to 5 aren't as robust as they are, then Fine Gael's came to be the only party that has produced all the costings that are rigorous and can be stood over kind of falls apart because you're admitting that the figures for years 2 through 5 aren't really reliable.
But if you'd again look at the table, we have set aside €600 million each year for tax change and the value of our tax changes each year are below €600 million. So as we look into the future of what could happen in 23, 24, 25, yes, you are correct. Because of the way in which incomes change, because of what can change with how economies perform, changes that we're proposing now could cost even more or even less in the future. But I have said in the manifesto and in the document, which I'm glad you've read, I have said that all of the different views, all of the different things that we're looking to do are contingent upon the economy continuing to go well.
Which is a point you've made a few times, and I know that's your excuse to try to bring up Brexit. And you say that your government is the only one that is the best place to try and make sure that we don't have the cliff edge trading disruption with the UK at the end of the year. And that's fine to a point, and very few people would find it difficult to quibble with the work that has been done by Simon Coveney and Helen McEntee and others. But is it not the case that at the end of December, if there is to be a new trading relationship between the UK and the European Union, that will have been negotiated not by Simon Coveney and by Helen McEntee, but by Phil Hogan in Brussels? Brussels, and Phil Hogan may have similar party allegiance to your own, but that's not to suggest that Phil Hogan is going to throw in the towel and somehow pursue a lesser outcome if it's not you guys in government buildings. So I suppose the question is, what difference does the makeup of the Irish government make when this is a trade talk between Westminster and Brussels and not with Dublin?
But that's the same format for the phase that we've just gone through. The phase that we've just gone through was led by Michel Barnier, and you've been good enough to acknowledge the great role that Helen and Simon played in that. The format is going to be repeated again, but you'll have Phil Hogan taking the lead in trade. So the way negotiations always happen between a third country and the European Union is they're led by the Commission. So the format of what is going to come up is exactly the same. And if you've acknowledged the positive role we've played in the current format to get to where we are, given that format is going to continue for phase two, I think it's reasonable to assume that there will be a need for an active and experienced but Irish government manager.
Does having an Irish commissioner not already make it very clear that the European Commission will know what the concerns are for Ireland?
Well, of course, when you're in the European Commission, your allegiance to and your mandate is to the European Union overall. And that's the work that Phil has to do. It's the work that Michel Barnier has to do. But if you accept the point that the Irish government was able to have a positive influence on negotiations that were led by the Commission in our recent past, I think therefore it is reasonable to assume there'll be a need to continue to do that in the future. But incidentally, as we look at where we're due to come up, the negotiation mandate, in other words, giving the direction to Phil, is set by the European Council. And the European Council is the collection of prime ministers. Mm-hmm. And in that room, there's no civil servants. There's just the leader of the country, Leo. And again, what I would ask your listeners to consider is, given the work that he has done in that area already, surely he's the man we need in the room now.
We saw the video that was posted by the Taoiseach on his Twitter account yesterday, and you were among many ministers who made it clear that you would never want to serve in coalition with Sinn Féin. I presume your position hasn't changed in the last 24 or 36 hours. If the numbers required, and if you were so anxious to keep Sinn Féin out of power, would you contemplate a grand coalition with Fianna Fáil, including in circumstances where their party was larger than yours?
The Taoiseach has already said that if we looked at every other option, which is supply and confidence, which is us trying to get a majority in the Dáil, and none of those options worked, then as a last resort, that's something that we would be willing to contemplate in the interest of providing a government to the country.
And with no votes already being cast, so this still being hypothetical, Micheál Martin of the Sunday Independent today is opening up the prospect of his party being in government and your party returning the favour of supplying confidence from outside. Is that something you'd contemplate?
Well, I hardly seen that as being a radical revolution from Micheál Martin, because what he is saying is, if I was the larger party, would other parties be willing to support me? And my answer to that would be contingent on what would be the programme for government that would be negotiated with them. Fianna Fáil only gave the commitment to supplying confidence to us after 73 days worth of negotiation. And given that a vote hasn't even been cast before we get to polling day, and I've no idea what would be the government that we would be negotiating with if we're not in it, while I'm happy to say in principle that we want to play a role in ensuring a stable government is there, but we don't want, and my view is that it shouldn't include Sinn Féin. Going beyond that at this point, it's just too much to do.
Maybe we'll revisit that topic if we're talking to you this day week when the boxes have been opened and the votes are actually being counted. But for now, thank you very much for your time this lunchtime. Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance, Fine Gael Director of Elections and candidate in Dublin Central.